Call this Senate Housing and Homelessness Prevention Committee to order. I will note that we do have a quorum present. So to set the stage for today, we're going to hear three bills. First, we will take up the agency technical bill. That bill will be amended so we can send it to the floor. And as a backup vehicle bill, the rest of it will be laid over for further consideration in a supplemental budget bill. After that, we'll hear two HIBs-related bills, which will both be laid over. So first on the agenda is Senate File 4804, Senator Port.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 4804 is the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency policy bill. This bill includes several technical updates, including significant new language related to climate resiliency, clean energy, and decarbonization. Notable provisions in this bill include adding, encouraging energy, climate resilience, reducing greenhouse gas emissions, and energy conservation to MHFA's policy goals. Additional language applies these standards to several existing MHFA programs, including rehabilitation grants and loans, energy conservation grants and loans, energy efficiency loans, rental property loans, and ensuring financial institution loans. This bill also allows MHFA to adjust rent and income limits for multifamily programs in order to accommodate federal requirements through Section 42 and Section 142. Allowing MHFA to consider accepting public assistance as qualifying criteria for those for their programs. It raises the debt ceiling for GO bonds from $5 billion to $7 billion. It moves authority over the Manufactured Home Relocation Trust Fund from MMB to MHFA. It removes population requirements from the Workforce Housing Development Program. Amends a carve-out to the Challenge Program funding in the 2023 omnibus bill to allow for gap financing, as well as to remove a sunset date for funding. It removes language from the 2023 fee-based home purchase pilot program, which required applicants to live in census tracts with at least 60% renter households, and other technical language related to accessible units, the housing tax credit contribution account, and the 2023 Northland Foundation funding. And Madam Chair, I have Dan Kitzberger with me from MHFA to answer questions.
Very good. Mr. Kitzberger, do you have comments to make or just for questions? Okay.
Madam Chair, members, no, not right now.
Very good. All right, members, questions, amendments, discussion? Senator Dreheim, when you're ready.
Thank you. So my understanding is most of this is just conforming with the federal government. Is that correct?
Mr. Kitzberger?
Madam Chair, Senator Dreheim, are there specific provisions to which you're referring?
Senator Dreheim.
Well, we're eliminating conservation throughout the bill.
Yep.
And
Mr. Kitzberger.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Senator Dreheim, a couple reasons. One is the term energy conservation is kind of limiting in terms of what we're actually trying to accomplish with both the agency's climate goals and then in recognition of some of the federal funding that's potentially available. We also wanted to use those programs throughout some of our existing programs and some of our programs that aren't currently funded in anticipation of those funds potentially being leveraged from the federal level.
Senator Dreheim.
Thank you. So can you just give us an example of what would be expanded by changing that verbiage or that nomenclature?
Mr. Kitzberger.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Senator Dreheim. So if you were to take a look at Section 3, might be a good example. This is the rehab loan program that you might be familiar with. This is an appropriated program that we use for extremely low-income households, primarily for updates on affordability to help you know people age in place, for example, is a common use of it. So we may use these funds along with the prospect of federal funds to, for example, reduce greenhouse gas emissions or do climate resiliency type projects to help hopefully mitigate the potential for disaster due to climate or the impacts of a disaster due to climate, and then hopefully reduce costs related to the energy consumption of the property.
Senator Draheim.
Thank you, Chair. So the reducing the cost of energy, is there a cost-benefit analysis done on that portion?
Mr. Kitzberger.
Madam Chair, Senator Draheim, yes, that's something our staff and our partner organizations evaluate as part of the application process for the loan with the household.
Senator Draheim.
Thank you, Chair. And then the last piece is the debt service piece. Raising that. How long has it been at the, what was it, $5 billion, excuse me?
Mr. Kitzberger.
Madam Chair, Senator Draheim, I don't know for certain, but I think that was the amount originally in statute. I can maybe check the history of the section, unless staff maybe know off the top of their head.
Sounds like no, Mr. Kitzberger. Senator Draheim.
Thank you. It would be interesting, committee members, to look at, you know, how long has it been at the $5 billion and, you know, look at what inflation has done since it was changed and see if that is the right number that we need to adjust. I'm not one to favor more debt, but I think we do owe it to look into it a little bit. So thank you.
Senator Port, any comments, or Mr. Kitzberger?
Madam Chair, Senator Draheim, just for kind of context purposes, at the end of fiscal year 23, because of the clarification that was made last year to only use outstanding general obligation bonds and notes in the calculation, at the end of fiscal year 23, we were just over $3.5 billion. And, you know, in the meantime, just this last year, the agency received significant new down payment assistance resources, which we would then pair with agency first mortgages, which are backed by those mortgage revenue bonds that count against that total. So we are anticipating by the end of fiscal year 25, likely breaching that $5 billion number.
Thank you. Senator Draheim.
Thank you, Chair. I'm wondering if we could maybe ask or find a fiscal staff to maybe do a little digging on that number and bring it to us on Thursday to look at when it was enacted, how often it's been changed, and then look at maybe inflation. Thank you.
Very good. I'm seeing head nods for that. Thank you. Other questions or discussion, members? Seeing none, Senator Port.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Because we are going to lay over most of this bill for inclusion, but also want to use it as a backup vehicle on the floor, I do have the A1 amendment.
Senator Port moves the A1 amendment. So as discussed, we're going to be laying over the budget-related sections of this bill to be considered in the supplemental budget bill. The other sections will remain in the bill and be sent to the floor purely to have a backup vehicle bill. So we will accomplish that with the A1, which is being passed out to members now. So we'll wait just a moment for members to have that before them. Also, I will just note we are having technical and internet issues at the moment, so the amendments will not be posted right now until we get that remedied. That is in the works, and as soon as we are able to post it, we will do so. All right, members, the A1 is before us. Any questions about that? All right, all those in favor of the A1, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes and the A1 is adopted. Senator Port, any other comments?
Nope, thank you. Appreciate it. We'll continue to discuss this as we hopefully get really great supplemental budget numbers. Maybe if I keep saying it out loud, it'll happen. But no, then, Madam Chair, I would move that Senate File 4804 be recommended to pass as amended and sent to general orders.
Very good. That is the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Motion carries, and your bill is on its way.
Thank you.
All right. The next bill we will hear is Senator Port's 4158. Senator Port.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 4158 authorizes the issuance of $500 million in housing infrastructure bonds and also includes several significant HIBs policy updates. The bill primarily expands proceed usage to allow for spending on recapitalization, which includes financing related to the physical and financial needs of distressed buildings. Financial capitalization needs may include debt forgiveness or restructuring, deferred maintenance, principal paydowns, and other uses. MHFA is also newly required to give priority to recapitalization and preservations projects for fiscal year 25 to 27, and advocates and stakeholders must be consulted on the development of these priorities. I think as we have these conversations about housing infrastructure bonds today, obviously we don't know our budget target yet, so these will all be laid over as part of that conversation. But I think as I've been talking with advocates and listening to the stories of what is happening to affordable housing in our state, really how I think of it is these buildings are state assets. They are investments we have made over the years in affordable housing at great expense that has incredible impact on our communities. Those projects must be upkept. If there is not money to keep them up, buildings deteriorate over time. They will not stay forever, and we will lose that affordable housing, those investments that we have made as a state in affordable housing. And so I really very much look at these housing projects as, you know, the same way we look at bonding projects. It's our responsibility as a state to continue to invest in the things that the state has deemed necessary to build and pay for. And I think that is sort of the way that I am looking at this, and thus the need for recapitalization. Again, we'll be laying all of this over because we don't know what our budget targets will be. But I think it's critical that we have the conversation about what the actual needs in the community are. And with that, I would like to go to my testifiers.
Senator Port, before we do that, would you like to move the A1 amendment?
Yes, I would like to move the A1 amendment.
This is an author's amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Motion carries, and the amendment is adopted. So now that the bill is in the form in which you would like to have it heard, we will move to testimony. First, we will hear from Phoebe Trepp. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Hello, Chair Bolden and members of the committee. My name is Phoebe Trepp, and I'm the Executive Director at Clear Housing. I'm here today to ask for your support for Senate File 4158. Clear Housing provides deeply affordable, permanent, supportive housing to end homelessness for people living with HIV. All of our units are for people under 30% AMI, and roughly 70% of our clients come to us directly from homelessness. While we serve 300 people each year, we have a waiting list of over 400 people. Our housing is saving lives and ending cycles of homelessness, along with ending new HIV transmissions. Our first affordable housing project opened in 2005. In the last few years, costs have accelerated and have contributed to a new landscape where our future is suddenly uncertain. Unforeseen cost increases include property insurance, maintenance and supplies, staffing shortages that for us have resulted in increased pay rates of 20 to 30% to all frontline staff, and utility expenses that nearly doubled previous actuals. In 2021, we submitted funding applications to recapitalize our first LIHTC project which was in its 16th year of housing people. Funding for these projects is built on a 15-year budget that establishes and then draws on a capital and operating reserve through the 15th year. Our application was not awarded. We've submitted applications to preserve our building, and again in 2023 were turned down. We're now in our 19th year with $0 in reserves. Our building has deferred maintenance issues, including an elevator that goes out intermittently and has parts that are no longer in production. When this happens, we scramble to find double staffing so we can physically carry residents down the steps in case of a fire or other emergency. We have requested $3.9 million in funding to preserve these homes for a very vulnerable population for another 15 years, but have been denied by MHFA, Hennepin County, and City of Minneapolis. We'll submit another round this year, but if not selected, we really see no choice other than to try to sell the property. Additional HIB dollars and prioritization of recapitalization is essential to preserving projects like ours, and I ask for your support of Senate File 4158 so CLEAR Housing and others like us can continue to serve and end homelessness within our community. And thank you for letting me speak, and I'd be happy to answer questions if you have them.
Thank you for your testimony. Next testifier will be Maggie Adi. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Bolden, members of the committee. My name is Maggie Adi. I'm the Community Development Projects Manager at Hope Community. I'm here today to ask your support of Senate File 4158 and to increase the state's investments in housing infrastructure bonds. Hope Community owns and manages 237 units of quality, affordable homes that house over 800 individuals and families. We work primarily in the Phillips community to create connections that strengthen the power of community members and communities. Last summer, we had to make the difficult decision to close one of our supportive housing buildings, the Dundry, which ultimately resulted in 25 households being displaced and the permanent loss of deeply affordable housing units. Facing major operating shortfalls and having drained Hope's organizational reserves to cover security and maintenance costs, we could no longer safely keep the building open. It's now vacant, boarded, has had a fire, and we have an order to demolish the building. Like CLEAR Housing, we approached the city, county, and state requesting financial assistance over a period of 18 months, but received the same answer, that there was nothing that could be done. So, ironically, the amount we now have to raise to demo the building is about what we would have needed to keep it open, around $200,000. This is a hard conversation to have, but it's necessary to understand the severity of the systemic problems Minnesota is facing to preserve our existing deeply affordable units. We hope that our story is never repeated, but with more than 2,500 units at risk of loss or closure because of the lack of funding available for preservation, we're worried that any progress we've made towards our affordable housing crisis will be lost. Please invest in housing infrastructure funding to support our deeply affordable housing and to continue to develop new single-family and multifamily homes. Thanks so much for your time and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Senator Ports, any comments before we move to member discussion?
I think it's just important to remember that the rules for being in these deeply affordable housing programs that the state subsidizes requires that these properties cannot carry cash reserves. So they cannot save the amount of money over time that is required to do this kind of upkeep that just naturally comes in the course of buildings. And it is incredibly expensive to build deeply affordable housing from scratch. It is the most subsidized, like it needs to be subsidized to the largest piece. It's a huge spend for the state. If we lose these housing units, they will be gone. And I think like that is a really important thing to remember, especially as it is state money that has built these in the first place, that has provided service, that has, you know, sheltered people in these deeply affordable units that are so desperately needed. If we lose them, it will be much, much, much more expensive to get them back and likely will never happen. I also have Carrie Johnson and Kelly Law here to answer technical questions as well.
Very good, thank you. Members, questions, discussion? Senator Draheim.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Senator Port, for bringing the bill forward. you know, I guess my first question has to do with line 5.26 and 5.27. Can you just elaborate on that and why is that in there? You know, you just got done telling us that other operators can't carry cash forward, and then this is for owner occupiers that you wanted to see a profit.
Senator Port.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and if I can turn it to Carrie Johnson, please.
Ms. Johnson, please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Carrie Johnson. I am the State Policy Director at the Metropolitan Consortium of Community Developers. And thank you for that question, Senator Dreheim. I also will say, if any of the other housing providers in the room would like to add some additional support, please do. Feel free to come up if my answer is not sufficient. And so in conversations with our many affordable housing providers, over the past year, we have come to understand that as a project is awarded funding and financing, the project itself is not able to carry a significant amount of cash reserves. It's just the reserves for the supportive services aspect and the property management. And so that does not include the kind of ongoing maintenance of the property, which obviously over the terms of years or just having residents move in and out, there is deterioration of properties that need ongoing maintenance. As you heard from Phoebe, especially referencing needing a new elevator, that is something that is monitored and managed by Minnesota Housing.
And Senator Port.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Dreheim. I think this is step one of starting to change that process so that these housing units don't have to get into a hole that they can't dig out of. The process needs to change.
Senator Dreheim.
Thank you. If I could, I love calling on our nonpartisan staff. They do such a good job, and they get lonely if we don't. Do we have anything in statute that defines entitled?
Ms. Painter.
Madam Chair and Senator Dreheim, offhand, I don't know, and because the internet's not working right now, I can't really do a search.
Senator Dreheim.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the answer. I think if you're going to move forward with this section, Senator Port, as you put your mess together, I say that in a nice way. But
it's going to be a beautiful mess.
Yeah. I think entitled is a little broad. I think we need defined terms. If this is the route you want to go, you know, it's pretty broad, in my opinion. So I think that line, if it stays in there, needs to get reworked. But if I could,
Senator Dreheim,
change directions a little bit.
Certainly.
So as drafted, do you know your debt service for your HIBs?
Senator Port.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Dreheim. I know Mr. Mueller knows the answer to this because we have gone over various iterations of where this lands.
Mr. Mueller.
Madam Chair and members, as drafted, the bill calls for $500 million of additional HIBs. $250 million would be available or in the first year. So that would be the amount that would start the debt service in fiscal year 27, based on $250 million, would be $5 million in HIBs the first year. And then it would increase after that, depending on when the rest of the rest of the HIBs were offered. So, but the only estimate I can give is what the first year amount would be, and that would be about $5 million in fiscal year 27. On top of what we're already paying for the debt service of other HIBs.
Senator Dreheim.
Thank you. you know, when I look at the whole life of those bonds, you know, I think the interest is almost more than the original bond over that 20-year period. Senator Port, do you know what we pay for interest and what the difference is between a GO bond and a HIB bond for interest?
Senator Port.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Dreheim. I don't offhand. I have them all up on my desk, but I don't have it with me. And I think I share your point. I think if I can do HIBs for cash, like, that is a much better way to do it. I certainly don't expect to get enough money to do $500 million in HIBs, but I think it is, unfortunately, has been in the way that housing has to be done, because we have never gotten the kind of budget targets that this area deserves.
Senator Dreheim.
Thank you. I just wanted to thank you for calling on me again, and I don't mean to hog the questions. I think my two colleagues on either side of me have questions. But I think we have to look at the debt service throughout the length of these bonds. And I personally think we need to try to find a different avenue to fund housing. And I don't think this is the most cost effective. I think we need to leverage our state dollars with private industry and do some guaranteed notes of some sort, kind of like the SBA does. It's very expensive to do housing bonds, and that cuts into the number of units we're able to do, mm-hmm. and we can debate on how and why and what entitled means and all that, but we all agree that we need to do more units. So I do have some issues with what's in this bill, but I will wait, Senator Port, until I see your final version to comment more. I appreciate the time.
Senator Port, any follow-up? Senator Lucero.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Port, for this. So as I was listening to the testifiers, and I forget who said it, but it was something to the effect of, or it might have even been you, current law prohibits a cash buildup. And so one of the things that I've always tried to do, and I have emphasized it multiple times in this committee, is look for root cause and try to solve the root cause rather than treating symptoms. And if I understood correctly, there's deferred maintenance because of depreciation, which naturally occurs with buildings, and the state law is prohibiting the ability to build up a reserve, a capital account, to be able to fund the naturally depreciating building. So if my understanding is correct and that's the root cause, why are we making a change in that area rather than treating a symptom and just throwing more money at it?
Senator Port.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Lucero. And that is what 5.26 and 5.27 do, is allow for that buildup of regular maintenance that, if it were allowable right now, would put off or extend at least much of the life that then turns into catastrophic problems, like the HOPE community was talking about.
Senator Lucero.
That is the HOPE.
Thank you, and I appreciate that. So then, and this is more of just a comment now, so whenever I see the word reasonable, it always scares me, because somebody has to define that.
Yep.
And what, it's a very subjective term that one person can think of something is reasonable and the other person, it's not, it's unreasonable. So I think that needs to have just a closer examination. And then additionally, who's the decider, right? Who decides what is reasonable? If we can at least agree on what reasonable is, then who's that decision maker? And I think this language is a good start, but yeah, the reality is, depreciation does occur, and I think it would be the best policy for the state to allow for them to at least try to be to the greatest degree possible self-sufficient rather than being in this position of having to apply to various units of government and then in this case come to the state for these funds. So thank you again, Madam Chair and Senator Port.
Other Madam questions? Senator Port.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if Ms. Johnson could just provide a little bit more context around that, but I really appreciate both Senator Lucero and Senator Dreheim. I'd love to work with you on that sentence, both the entitled and reasonable. I think we can find acceptable alternatives between the three of us.
Ms. Johnson.
Thank you, Chair, and Senator Lucero. Appreciate the comments. And I also agree we want to get to the root cause and try to prevent these things from happening. Our system for developing affordable housing has relied on inadequate funding systems. And so this language at 5.26 is meant to help keep appropriate cash reserves while the property is within kind of that 15-year term. But we still need additional resources in the current system that we have in order to provide preservation recapitalization funding. So it's a yes and. One or the other will not solve for kind of the overall issue because the projects are only funded for a certain amount of time with that maintenance built in.
Thank you. Senator Housley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't know if nonpartisan staff, Mr. Mueller, I think the internet's back up and working. I saw a sheet the other day that had the HIBs issuance of bonds to these organizations going back to like 2008. And I don't know if you have that layout when it went 2008, 2009, 10, if you could tell us how much has been issued in, yeah, that sheet you have right there. That one. How much, I don't have it. How much has been issued in the last 16 years?
Mr. Mueller.
Madam Chair and Senator Halsey, the sheet that I have right now doesn't show how much has been issued to the recipients. The sheet I have shows how much debt service is paid out based on what's already been awarded. Like the debt service that the state pays on the HIBs that have already been issued. It doesn't show who has received the HIBs.
Senator Housley.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Mueller. How much money has been issued? How much in bonds? How many bonds have been issued? Total number, or if you can kind of just go over you, because I know the last year that was issued was $100 million, right? And I know we had some like heartache over the $100 million. I can say in the last 16 years, and I don't know it year by year, but the first year was very, very little, and it kept getting bigger over the last 16 years. To the last year, it was either 21 or 22, was $100 million, and that was really, again, hard to stomach. So I guess my question is for the author, Linz. $500 million is almost as much as we have issued in the last 16 years. It was $524 million, adding all of those up, and now this is $500 million. Like, we did $1 billion to housing last year, so now another $500 million in HIBs is a lot. So just wondering why that number.
Senator Port.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the question, Senator Housley. The $500 million, I don't believe we're going to get. But the reason that it's in the bill is because it is needed. Like, 500 could be used in our community right now. We are 100,000 housing units short. We know that having housing infrastructure bonds in a sort of steady stream or like with enough room that people can count on them brings development. It allows people to plan, it allows developers to plan, and you know, when it's unstable, when we don't have a steady amount of money going to HIBs, less development comes because folks don't know what to plan for. This is, you know, my wildest dream of what we should be funding housing at. I'm under no illusions that that's going to happen because
We're not going to get a budget target that's big enough to do $500 million. But I'm not going to stop fighting for it, because this is what the need is. This is what our communities are telling us. This is what our supportive housing providers are telling us, that, like, we're in crisis. The need is urgent. And so for me, it is my message to leadership, to the governor, to the housing advocates, to the folks who are counting on us to do what is needed in our communities, authoring a bill that says we need $500 million in HIBs is my way of saying, I hear you, I'm gonna fight for you. I think we need to take the housing crisis seriously, which is unfortunately not something that the legislature has done consistently over the last couple of decades.
Members, Senator Housley, I'll come back to you, but I want to call members' attention to the document that was referenced earlier has been passed out, and Mr. Mueller is going to give us an overview of that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What this document that was just handed out describes is that the current general fund debt service on the first sort of table at the top shows what's been issued for HIBs to date. Starting in 2008, when $30 million was issued, and then in 2021 is when the last $100 million was issued. You'll remember in last year's budget bill, there was no HIBs, it was all cash HIBs. So after 2021, there is no new authorization. So there's been $545 million worth of HIBs issued since 2008. The current debt service payment on that, you'll see in fiscal year 24, is $35.3 million. It grows to $38.9 million and stays at that per year going on. There's a 20-year payoff on the HIBs. So currently, we still, if you look down on the total payments after 2027, current authorization, just to pay off the HIBs that we currently have, there would be another $443 million after fiscal year 27. I have two other boxes sort of there showing the other proposals that at least the governor's budget had $50 million of HIBs. That would have a first year debt service payment of $1 million. And then Senate File 4158, I referenced the full 500 here. And that would have a payment of $10 million the first year, but the language actually says only half of that would be issued, so that would actually be $5 million would be issued, debt service in 2027. So, Senator Housley, I hope this is the answers your questions about the sort of total debt service to date and what has been issued, and then looking ahead of what the ongoing cost of that would be.
Senator Housley.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair and Mr. Mueller. That is the document and that is the information, so thank you very much. I guess, Senator Port, just coming out, I'll tell you what I saw when I was kind of shocked, and then when you get that wall that goes up, you're like, oh my gosh, there's no way we can do 500 million. You sort of shut down. I know it's a dream, but sometimes I think to really get into a serious conversation, I think it would be a little bit more realistic to have a more realistic number that we can maybe somehow work on. So it just kind of shocked me, that's all. So thank you.
Senator Port, follow up. Senator Dreheim.
Thank you, Chair. Getting back to the 5.26, 5.27, you know, my original thought, and we were having a little side discussion here, was what HOAs do for their reserve, and maybe look at that as an example of guidelines so we're not in this position, and give a little flexibility for entities to have some reserve and help with the nonpartisan great staff we have that we ask questions at the last minute to all the time, draft something similar to that instead of what we have here. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Dreheim. I'll note that we are going to be laying this bill over, so there is time to work on that language. So appreciate that. Other questions or discussion? Closing comments, Senator Port.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members.
$500 million is a shocking number. You're absolutely right, Senator Housley. And it is shocking that we are in a position where our supportive housing providers who are providing the most deeply affordable housing to the most vulnerable in our communities are in a position where they are closing units and we are losing those units because they don't have the ability to upkeep an investment that the state has already invested $545 million worth of bonds in. It is a problem we should fix. It is a problem we can fix, but we need everybody at the table to look at solutions. And I would love if we got a $1 billion housing budget every budget year, because we could provide that in cash and not need to rely on HIBs, which would be, you know, which would help with that debt service piece. And believe me, I will be advocating for it. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Port. There certainly are enough needs for that to be put to good use across the state. With that, Senate File 4158 will be laid over for further consideration. I will hand the gavel back to Chair Port, and our next bill would be Senator Zhang's Senate File 4940.
Chair, as we're getting set up for this, if I have two amendments, and I think it would be helpful if all the members had time to look at them. So I'd like to grant permission to pass out the A3 and the A4.
Very good. Thank you, Senator Graham. The A3 and A4 will be passed out. Senator Zhang, whenever you are ready, you may proceed.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, Senate File 4940 is one of several bills aimed at providing long-term solutions to ensure the affordable housing Minnesotans that Minnesotans have invested in over decades remains viable for decades to come. Significant challenges to the sustainability of the affordable housing market were exposed during the COVID pandemic. What first was hoped to be a short-term blip turned out to be a new structural reality of higher costs to operate a building without the needed revenue to meet those costs. As my testifiers will explain, this bill provides some of the solutions to reinvest in existing properties, to allow the owners to operate them, and to reform the way we finance properties going forward, so our new investments don't result in the same problems down the road. And also with that, Madam Chair, I have a A2 amendment also.
I believe it's the A1 amendment as an author's amendment. Is that?
Yes.
It is the A2. Apologies. The A2 amendment yes. is an author's amendment. All those in favor say aye. Aye. All those opposed say no. Motion carries. Amendment is adopted. Senator Zhang.
Yep. And I'd like to pass it on to the testifier.
Very good. Thank you. We will first hear from Ellen Sally.
You're right.
Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senators. My name is Ellen Sally. I'm president of the Family Housing Fund. And today I'm joined by my colleague, Andrea Brennan, president of the Greater Minnesota Housing Fund. Together, we help communities throughout Minnesota meet their affordable housing needs. And complementing your investments, the two housing funds have invested more than $1.2 billion of private capital in the continuum of housing in Minnesota, from shelter to rental housing to homeownership. And our goal is to partner with government and developers to build a housing system that works for everyone. And as such, we are in a unique position to address the proposed legislation, Senate File 4940. I'll speak to the challenges experienced by rental property owners right now, and Andrea will speak to how the proposed legislation addresses these challenges. As you may be aware, affordable rental housing owners are facing challenges that surfaced during the pandemic, yet the roots of the problems they're experiencing predate the pandemic. There are varying causes, yet the challenges impact the affordable housing sector and the residents who call the affordable housing developments home. Further, these affordable housing developments represent critical infrastructure that the state of Minnesota has made. The Two Housing Fund's goal is to continue our partnership with you to preserve the valuable housing infrastructure that you have financially supported. So here is the challenge. Affordable rental housing owners have experienced significantly higher operating costs, expenses including increased property insurance, additional costs of security, higher property management costs, while experiencing a significant decrease in revenue from rent arrears and inefficient and slow rental assistance payments. As a result, many nonprofit housing providers have had to delay much-needed maintenance to stay afloat against the backdrop of dramatic operating cost increases and revenue reductions. This is not by choice, this is by necessity. And if we fail to address the challenges today, we put people who are currently residing in these properties at risk. The potential consequences are alarming. Our coalition has identified a minimum of 3,500 units statewide that have been sold or are being actively marketed and considered for sale. It's important to note that this situation is not unique to Minnesota. Across the country, states and cities are grappling with this same issue. There is no easy fix, but with your support, we can make progress.
Thank you, Ms. Sally. Now we'll go to Andrea Brennan. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and present your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I am Andrea Brennan, president of the Greater Minnesota Housing Fund. Thank you for the opportunity to give testimony. Last legislative session, you approved historic levels of new resources for affordable housing creation and preservation. The successful implementation of these historic resources will, in part, depend on the health of our housing providers, those working on the front lines of providing safe, decent, and affordable housing for Minnesota families. You also recognized the importance of housing providers in this system and took action to provide some financial relief by funding the Stable Housing Organization Relief Program, or SHORP. Thank you for this investment. It is providing a lifeline for many organizations, and it created a bridge to help us develop a longer-term plan to stabilize and recapitalize existing affordable rental housing throughout the state. Since October, the two funds, together with LISC Twin Cities and the Metropolitan Consortium of Community Developers, have been convening a coalition of 36 affordable housing organizations and philanthropies that focus on affordable housing that are statewide, with more than 70 people from these organizations engaging in these discussions. We held nearly 20 meetings over the past several months to develop and refine the proposed legislation that you see before you in this bill, as well as other strategic plan elements. So today's bill include three main components. One is more funding through the housing infrastructure bonds. We certainly support the $500 million ask in Senator Port's bill. There's definitely need for that level of investment in both new creation of housing and recapitalization. We support the use of HIBs for this new eligible use of recapitalization. The second thing that this bill does is it adds recapitalization of distressed affordable housing as an eligible use under other state programs. So it wouldn't be limited just to housing infrastructure bonds. It would allow for recapitalization of using other state resources. Those are the two main components in this bill. Beyond the legislation, we are working very closely with Minnesota Housing and other local government funders to increase collaboration to stabilize and recapitalize existing distressed affordable housing. We welcome Minnesota Housing's leadership in thinking about these challenges with new solutions in mind. Taken together, these changes will help preserve both current and future housing that low-income Minnesotans depend on. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Ms. Brennan. Next up on the testifiers list, I have Deirdre Schmidt and then Chris Latondras. Ms. Schmidt, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and present your testimony.
Chair Port, members of the committee, my name is Deirdre Schmidt and I am the president and CEO at Common Bond Communities. Thanks for hearing me today related to Senate File 4940. Common Bond provides housing and supportive services in 50 Minnesota cities, including homes for more than 1,500 renter households in districts represented by lawmakers on this committee. We provide housing for extraordinarily low-income seniors, those coming out of homelessness, and working families. And all Common Bond residents can take advantage of our free services to help them stabilize and thrive. I am so grateful that the legislature acted last year to support housing production and resident stability in a really historic way. I'd like to urge you to keep pushing for the housing resources that we need in Minnesota to produce new and maintain existing affordable housing. One key theme in the conversations with the Greater Minnesota and Family Housing Funds, and the number one priority in my mind, is making sure that the affordable housing that we already operate is properly maintained and prudently staffed. Given inflation in the operating expense categories that are largely beyond our discretion and control, like insurance and utilities that were mentioned previously, many of our properties are running operating deficits. Operating deficits result when the revenue from rents that are affordable to low-income folks do not generate enough to cover the operating expenses for those same homes. That is the case in most of our properties currently. Common Bond has cash advances outstanding to two-thirds of our housing communities currently, totaling nearly $20 million. Many people are surprised when I tell them that we do not receive operating funds over time. The low-income housing tax credit, which is a federal source, and subordinate loans made possible by the state and city governments, and that comprise most of our sources, are one-time infusions to help build homes, but not to consistently maintain them or to provide social services. Now, we're working really hard to find efficiencies where we can, and we have been tightening our belts in every aspect of operations. In fact, in November of last year, Common Bond had to reduce our workforce by 22 positions, bringing our staffing levels to a 10-year low. In the MHP survey that was recently conducted, many of our peers reported being in a similar position and having very limited choices for action. Many have deferred maintenance in order to pay the mortgage, keep the lights on, or provide staffing. And I want to pause to reflect and say that maintenance and staffing are the two cost areas that we know impact resident experience and neighbor experience most directly. Cuts in these areas also undermine the quality of the physical assets in the long term. What Common Bond's properties and those of our peers require is financial restructuring and additional investment in the physical plant of older properties. In order to do that and to continue to produce new housing, our system needs additional resources that you see reflected in the increase in HIBs. And as well, it needs a clear direction to prioritize this activity. Existing affordable housing assets, which have hundreds of millions of dollars of previous public investment, are in danger. The stability and sustainability of housing for so many Minnesotans doesn't include a ribbon cutting for a new unit. But the measures in Senate File 4940 will help make sure that we aren't losing ground faster than we can build new homes. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Schmidt, and welcome to the committee. Mr. Latondras, please introduce yourself for the record and present your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Port and members of this committee. My name's Chris Latondras. I'm the CEO of Beacon Interfaith Housing Collaborative and recently former Hennepin County Commissioner. I served as HRA Chair and Co-Chair of Heading Home Hennepin. Beacon is among Minnesota's most prolific developers of permanent supportive housing. That's deeply affordable homes with on-site services to meet the unique needs of our residents. In the months since I traded my gavel for a hard hat, I've learned a few things I wish I had better understood when I was a policymaker. Number one, Minnesota's nonprofit affordable housing ecosystem is extraordinary, but it's also fragile. Without this dynamic public-private partnership, few of our collective housing goals are possible. We need to protect it. Two, the mental health crisis, the opioid epidemic, and aftershocks of the pandemic economy have hit our residents very hard. For Beacon, this means operational challenges, surging costs, and declining revenues stacked on already razor-thin margins and old assumptions about the actual costs of serving residents, especially in supportive housing. We are counting our runway to operate current service models in months rather than years. I do not intend to be alarmist, but the stakes are high with over 3,500 units in our sector and thousands of residents at risk in the next year alone without urgent action. The state's short funding came at a critical time. It's a lifeline, but it was also a short-term response to a structural problem. We need long-term systemic solutions, and that's what this legislation is all about. It's about expanding housing investments to meet the moment. It's about continuing to build new affordable housing with a newfound focus on adequately capitalizing services and operations reserves upfront. It's about serving residents living in homes made possible by yesterday's state investments through recapitalization. And it's about reimagining our housing system moving forward. Minnesotans deserve a sustainable housing system that works, and this legislation puts Minnesota on that path. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Latondras. Senator Zhang, do you have any closing or any remarks before we go to member questions?
The ongoing investments in building new housing, it's essential to address this housing crisis and the role of supportive housing. It's in part of that to avoid homelessness and, providing a critical service.
Thank you very much. Members, Senator Lucero.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator, for bringing this forward and for allowing us to have this continued very, very needed conversation. As I was listening to the four testifiers, I appreciate their words, but I heard a reoccurring theme, and that was forces that exist in our reality in the housing space, whether it's an owner-occupied, whether it's a single-family rental, whether it's a multifamily rental, whether it's a mom-and-pop shop, whether it's a very large operator, whether it's a nonprofit, for-profit, the theme I heard was insurance costs are rising. Management costs, property management costs are rising. Maintenance costs are rising. And one of the testifiers, I think it was the testifier here, said operational losses are a reality of what's happening because of the exploding costs. And that has created a hardship across the board for everybody, whether you're a rental or not. And so I guess the question I would have is, are any of these forces that were explained that are having this detrimental impact and creating these stressors on everybody? It's not just leading more people into homelessness. There are those that may technically not go into homelessness or into poverty technically, but the stress that it places on the family when so much of one's income is being chewed up with these housing costs. The question is, with all these forces that I heard, I also heard over and over again that it's affordable housing providers. Is there something unique about these forces that are having this adverse impact that's uniquely impacting affordable housing providers, or is it all providers across the board?
Senator Zhang.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Lucero, for that question. Maybe one of the testifiers could answer that.
Ms. Schmidt?
Sure. Thank you, Chairport, Senator Lucero. It is true that there are some large dynamics that are impacting, you know, I mean, anyone in the economy is experiencing some nature of inflation. It is true that multifamily housing is experiencing disproportionate inflation in particularly areas like insurance, in some locations, security costs, staffing costs. These are, you know, truly near universal dynamics, so you're right to point those out. I would say, though, it's important to recognize that in regulated affordable housing, which is what we're referring to here, we have a limited ability to increase our rents and to then collect those rents from admittedly extraordinarily low-income people who are already, in some cases, rent-burdened. We have a limited ability to keep pace with those expenses as they increase. Furthermore, there are expenses that are essentially conveyed to operators of supportive housing in particular to provide social services to those same populations, not just the bricks and mortar home, that mean that those pressures are even more threatening to the organizations that are dependent on to provide those services. And the absence of our ability to properly staff to provide those services have impacts beyond just literal homelessness or non-sheltered living, but it also has to do with mental, chemical health, and economic, you know, prosperity for folks. So there's a lot more, I would say, at play and in the balance in affordable housing than there is across just the general, impacts of inflation in the economy.
Senator Lucero?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Excuse me, and I appreciate that. And I appreciate what organizations such as those of the testifiers are doing, because mental health is a serious issue. Those that are on fixed incomes, it's a serious issue. How to provide them high quality of life, affordable housing, in the face of these forces that are having this impact. And again, I appreciate, Madam Chair, this topic as part of a larger conversation that we're having. And I just want it to be impressed on members of this committee and everybody listening that these forces are not unique to affordable housing providers. It's everybody. And there are multiple bills that have gone through the committee, and we continue to have conversations, and it just needs to be recognized that the more the government and this committee and bills that are passed that create uncertainty, that increase risk, that increase costs on the providers that might right now be on the edge. They may not be affordable housing providers, but they're on the edge of trying to provide housing. I consider myself trying to do the best I can to provide affordable housing to my tenants. I don't want to have them chew up 50, 60% of their budget on housing, but I'm not a technical affordable housing provider. But I'm trying to provide affordable housing. And I just hope that as we continue these conversations in the coming weeks, that these forces are real, and the more regulation we impose on our housing providers, regardless of the type, does add stressors that do get passed on to tenants, regardless of their income bracket. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Pa.
Thank you, Chair Port. I just have a question here. There on the A2 amendment on line 1.5, it talks about distressed buildings. And I was just wondering if I can get some clarification when it says distressed buildings mean an existing rental housing building. I'm wondering, rental housing building, is there like a minimum number of units that this particular reference has in place, or is it like one unit, or is it a minimum number of units when we're talking about this particular definition?
Senator Zhang?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Pa. Maybe the testifier can give you a more succinct answer.
Chair Port, Senator Fah, I don't know the specific intent of that reference, but I would tell you there is one kind of pre-existing definition. Multifamily is typically considered anything 5 units or more. I don't know whether that would be something that would be helpful to reference specifically.
Yes, I think I have the answer for you.
Okay. Ms. Sally, welcome back to the committee table.
Thank you very much, Senator Port. The answer to your question, Senator Fa, is that the language in the amendment does not specifically define the number of units that constitutes a rental property. So it's not there, and certainly we can consider that. But as Ms. Schmidt mentioned, the target is for rental property, multifamily rental property specifically, but the language is not there.
Okay, thank you. I thought that would be the case, but I wasn't sure. And I guess as I read more and more into that subdivision, I thought I better get that clarified.
Thank you.
Senator Drahan.
Thank you, Chair. I wanted other members to have a chance, so I appreciate you calling on me last. I think this section 2A definitely needs to be tightened up, because the way I interpret it, it could be almost anybody that has rental property, if that is the intent of the author. And thank you for bringing it forward. I guess the first thing I'd probably want to do is the amendments, and then I have some more comments if I could, Chair. So the A3, maybe?
Senator Drahan moves the A3. And I believe we all have that in front of us. Senator Drahan, to your amendment.
Thank you, Chair. So the A3 would add to the committee, if you will, appointing members from the minority leads in both the House and the Senate. You know, it wasn't that long ago your caucus was in the minority, and now the roles are reversed. You know, is something as important as housing that I think is nonpartisan. I think the minority normally has a voice or two that they would like at the table that sometimes the majority doesn't have at the table. So this amendment would allow that to happen. And I think it's a good structure. And I hope everybody would support it.
Thank you, Senator Drahan. I also think this has a lot of promise. I think it is drafted to part of the language that was deleted, so we might have to work on that. But I agree with you that it should be, we want more people in this conversation, not fewer, and that makes a lot of sense to me. Senator Zhang, do you have thoughts on this?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Drahan. Yes, it's not an idea that, you know, I don't think any of us is opposed to. It's just that for Section 9 and 10, so for Section 9, the insurance task force was in the original drafting. You know, we've been working with the other body and Department of Commerce, and I think we can, they're looking at trying to address that concern through other means. And so it's, that's why it was taken out. And for the, for Section 10, I think the other amendment goes to that too. You know, we think the work can be done with the Legislative Commission on Housing Affordability, and so didn't want to duplicate the work.
Yeah. Senator Drahan.
Thank you. Chair, I will withdraw this amendment, but I think as you move forward with your magic bill, I think it's important to keep the minority in mind. I think it helps level the playing field for all voices.
Senator Drahan, I'm happy to work with you on this language as we move forward.
Thank you. A4 would be the next amendment, Chair, if I could offer that.
Senator Drahan moves the A4.
So, members, the A4 you know, for me, it's always been about home ownership in the end and that pathway to home ownership. Not that other parts of the housing ecosystem aren't important. But I think to get there, we need to know what's working and what isn't working. And I think this amendment would help us understand how many units are created, not just remodeled, but I think we keep on seeing 100,000, 100,000, 100,000, but we really don't track how successful we are. And your bill last year was a huge, huge dollar amount, probably more than that's been spent in 25 years on housing. So we should know how we're doing. You know, we can debate if we should spend that much or not spend that much, but we should track so we can use resources more efficiently as we move forward. So that's what the A4 does. I understand it might need some tweaking now that we adopted the other amendment, but interested to see what the author has to say.
Senator Zhang.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Dreheim, for the intent there. I think there's some concern over the, focus on owner-occupied instead of, so maybe the testifier can elaborate a little bit more on that point.
Ms. Sally.
Senator Port, Senator Dreheim, thank you. The focus of this bill is really on affordable rental housing, and the concept initially with this task force was to focus on the specific challenges in response to what rental housing operators are experiencing. While we absolutely value owner-occupied housing and work closely with Minnesota Housing to create more ownership opportunities, it wasn't the focus of this bill.
Senator Dreheim.
Thank you, and I appreciate that. And every handout we have has the same talking points that I had 8 years ago about the home ownership gap. And that's always been my driving force, that to level the playing field, our goal should be that. Not that this isn't important, but I think it was a good place to bring it up and to add it. So hopefully, Chair, I'll remove the A4. But hopefully, as you move forward with whatever bill you're going to have, which we can discuss after we're done with this bill, if we have time, that you would include some kind of language like this.
Senator Dreheim withdraws the A4.
And then if I could.
Senator Dreheim.
Okay, thank you. We heard a lot of concerns that we've heard when we're out in district and in the touring from the good people that are working very hard to provide the lowest cost housing units in the area probably that we need to be most involved in as a state, because no one else is going to do it, plain and simple. So I appreciate it, but we hear over and over again about the cost of doing business. And, last year, when you started out as chair, we had some people in talking about all the double-digit increases in the cost of operating a building and providing housing. I know some nonprofits aren't taxed. So I know that isn't always an issue, but insurance has really gone up. And it's hard, I think, for a nonprofit to budget for doubling in insurance with less coverage. So not only is the insurance rates going up, they're providing less coverage. And that is no fault to the insurance industry. It's just because of the high claims we had here in Minnesota. We heard about the cost of upkeep. And we all know everything is really expensive. The inflation's really hurting, especially those on the lower end of the income spectrum. But I just want to remind members, this is true for all forms of housing. And I think that's why our caucus, the Republican caucus, has pushed so hard against rent control, because it does limit what you can raise rent, which no one wants that, But I think we have to be mindful when we do broad statutes that affect everybody, and rent control is one that I think affects people more than anything. So I just want to remind everybody here that the same issues that a for-profit, Senator Lucero, with his handful of rental units that he has, faces the same challenges that these good nonprofits do. So the goal is to build more units. We need more units, period, of all kinds. So what are we doing with our bill this year in that respect is what I would love to hear after we're done with this bill, Chair. Thank you.
Senator Zhang, any closing comments?
No, thank you, members, for the discussion, and I hope that we continue to have these conversations in mind going forward with, you know, what Senator Lucero and Senator Dreheim had provided us. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Zhang. Senate File 4940 is laid over for possible inclusion. Senator Dreheim, to your point, I want to make a few announcements. First, we will be meeting on Thursday, but we will not be meeting next week. Thursday, we will have for sure the WERA bill with the report out of the workforce on expediting emergency rental assistance, which Ellen and I served on together and spent many hours developing incredible recommendations. So I will do a readout of that report and also the bill that includes recommendations. As far as a straight policy bill, all of the policy that we have heard in this committee is either in state gov with the zoning package or in judiciary with the tenants' rights package, with the one exception of rent control on senior housing, which I'm not gonna move forward at this time. So it is possible that we might have one of those bills back in our committee tomorrow or Thursday, but it is up to the chairs of those two committees on what they are able to get to us. And so we are, you know, sort of waiting to hear from them at that point. Then after Easter break, we will come back and do, with our incredible budget target, whatever supplemental budget bill we have, which is where the HIBS policy and the agency policy will go. Senator Lucero.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate that update. And so I just want to put on your radar, I appreciate the conversation I've been having with your staff, actually. Just trying to keep that HOA, if an opportunity presents itself, I think it's another great topic, an important topic that is affecting everybody across Minnesota. Everybody seems to be having an opinion on HOAs, and I think having a committee hearing, if it's after the Easter break, I think that'd be great to give people the opportunity to voice their concerns and their experiences, and I think it's long past due for the legislature to at least begin to hear those very valuable opinions. Thank you, Madam
Senator Lucero, thank you for bringing that up. I completely agree with you. That bill is currently in judiciary, but I will figure out if they are planning to hear it, and if they're not, request that it come back to our committee, and we will do a hearing after Easter on that bill. Senator Dreheim.
Thank you, Chair. And the bill that was removed, is that the bill you're referring to, that 4704? Or is that, what's the track of that one? That's the DHS.
Senator Dreheim, that's the bill we're hearing on Thursday.
Okay, perfect, yep. Thank you. And then last night, Chair, the Judiciary Committee that I'm grateful I'm not on.
I think a lot of us were grateful last night.
Went late, and it had some tenant law stuff in it. Will that be coming back here before your bigger bill, or is that going somewhere else?
It's a great question, Senator Dreheim. The intention was last night to have them at the end of the night package those tenant bills back up into one bill and send it to us. That did not happen, so we are working with Judiciary to figure out sort of what the plan is now.
Okay, thank you.
With that, members, one other thing I wanted to raise, there is a bill potentially in the Commerce omnibus bill that is a task force to look at insurance costs. And I am requesting from the chair that if that task force does become a reality this year, that the Housing Committee also gets a readout of that report. I think that would be important for our committee. And with that, there is no other business before us. We are adjourned.